Hello, friends, and welcome to episode number 261 of Bad Flips and Maple Dips. It's Patrick, he's Justin, and, well, this is the weekend that, and the week that you could really, you know, hope for if you pray to a god or a deity out there. You pretty much got your wish this week. Jays fans, very fortunate. The Jays kicked ass this week. And really, they've been kicking ass for about 2 weeks, and we'll talk about all of it. Justin, yeah, couldn't have gone better.
Correct, yeah. They must be keeping the bats warm because Jobu is pleased.
Huh? Yeah. All right.
Major League reference on there.
Yeah, yeah. But all it took was 5 runs per game to knock out the Royals. And I got to tell you, man, the Royals, they're not as bad as everybody thinks they are. They're just, their bullpen is very shallow. And just a couple of weird snafus. And this was a lot tighter than the scores indicate, but a win is a win is a win, so we take those. We'll talk about all of it. We'll talk about how the Jays are doing with their injuries. We'll also talk about who do you want to talk about today? Who should we talk about today?
Let's talk about, I don't know.
Let's talk about Jose Barrios.
It's been a long weekend.
Yeah, I know. We'll get into a little bit on Jose Barrios. What a turnaround season. Unbelievable.
Oh, yep.
Even if the wheels came off tomorrow, and I mean, I'm not wishing for that. I'm just saying if they were, it's still a hell of a season. But yeah, we'll talk about all of it. Let's get right into the injury stuff though, because there's lots of good news and then some not as good news, but news that might be maybe a little bit more palatable, depending on, you know, what your flavor is. Justin, let's go through the injuries.
For sure. So, some good news, of course. We know that Bo Bichette was activated on Friday. He appeared at shortstop Friday night, got a day off yesterday, and then was the designated hitter in today's game. They're trying to ease Bo back into it. Obviously, hoping that he can play every game of the upcoming Rangers series. So getting him a day on his feet and then a couple days out of the field is probably pretty smart. The corresponding move, Mason McCoy was sent back down to Buffalo, which is not surprising. In not so good news, we know Danny Jansen had fractured his right middle finger last week after getting hit by a foul ball when he was catching. He underwent surgery. He's definitely out for the regular season. There is a potential that he could be back in October if the Blue Jays were to make a deep playoff run, but in all likelihood, Danny Jansen will not be in the game for the Blue Jays until spring training of next year. Brandon Belt, who was suffering from the poopy bum, has not appeared in a game since the 2nd of September, but has allegedly been good enough to pinch hit the last few games, but the Jays just haven't needed to use him. And Matt Chapman is still working on his way back. He's doing some light hitting as well as fielding ground balls, but no throwing as of yesterday anyway. I didn't hear an update today on the broadcast.
I didn't hear one either.
Yeah, and Eric Swanson likely will be back tomorrow. He pitched yesterday for the Buffalo Bison Saturday through one inning of scoreless ball with a strikeout. In all likelihood, he's back for the Rangers series tomorrow, which is good news. So, I mean, outside of Danny Jansen, the news is really, I guess you could say, positive. We know Bo's back. We know that Belt is probably going to be okay for this upcoming series against Texas. And Chapman's on his way back as well at some point, hopefully in the next week or so. But, yeah, that's it.
Yeah, mostly good shit. I have to ask, though, if Eric Swan, and I do apologize, I thought my mic was muted there, and I took a sip of my water bottle.
Oh, no, it's
and
fine. It's, we got a nice little sipperino there.
It sounded like something else, but it's a water bottle, I can assure you. Oh my gosh, that's embarrassing. But yeah. Who is Eric Swanson going to take over for?
Bowden Francis or Jay Jackson, one of those two.
Feelings are iffy on this, but like I can't. I don't know who it should be.
In all honesty, for me, I'm probably keeping Bowden Francis. I think he's provided a lot of value. He's your long guy. I mean, Chad Green in seasons past before Tommy John surgery was a 4 to 6 out kind of guy if needed. And I mean, Jordan Hicks has done it a few times in his career, but outside of those two, I don't know who else you trust to go more than an inning. And I mean, if you look at Bowden Francis, he's given up like only 6 runs, and 3 of them were in his first 2 appearances since the 7th of July. He's been really up since the end of July this time. He's only given up 2 runs, and one of them was in that 3-inning save he had against Cincinnati where he went 3 innings and only gave up the 1 run on a solo shot. And then the other run was a few days before against Philly when he gave up a solo shot as well. But other than that, he's really limited hits and has not walked a batter since August the 11th. And while his strikeouts have actually been pretty high, he struck out the side in the game against Oakland there last week, had 4 strikeouts in 3 innings against the Nationals before that, another striking out of the side against Cleveland before that. Like, he's actually proven to be a pretty valuable piece. Whereas, I mean, Jay Jackson's been relatively solid, but he's had definitely given up a lot more base runners than Bowden Francis has, especially lately. And I wonder how much the Blue Jays will value having a multi-inning guy in Francis versus a single-inning guy. I mean, Jay Jackson could probably go more than 1 inning, but you don't really want to push him too much, you know?
How do you feel about the idea of... I'm putting it all out there. I'm not saying this is what's going to happen or what should happen, but how do you feel about the concept of riding the hot arm as long as possible? And even if you have to make a decision that could ultimately cost you a player.
I think because, I believe in that. Yeah.
Because I have, there is one guy that I think has not been performing as well. I don't know I would go so far as to say they're out of gas, but they were not very good in August, and they've been terrible in September. And I'm wondering if you roll the dice on sending this player down.
Just say the name.
Yeah, I don't think I can do this any more cloak and dagger. I think, honestly, looking at how much Trevor Richards has struggled in his last 7 appearances. In his last 7 appearances, he's gotten ripped apart at least twice. And I would argue that 2 of his other appearances where he gave up runs were not... Mm-hmm. great, and they include an appearance on the 8th against Kansas City. And we'll talk about those games in a minute, but honestly, I've come around on Trevor Richards all the way up until probably August 23rd. I was on the train, and he got torn apart by Baltimore.
Mm-hmm.
He did not look good against Colorado the second time he went out. The game against Oakland, he gave up 3 runs. And then today, again, we needed him to close the door, and he didn't... Or on the 8th, sorry. We needed him to close the door, and he didn't really do it.
Yeah.
I will say, to his defense, in most of those appearances, he was stretched. August 26th, he was stretched. August 28th, he was stretched. September 30th, was stretched. And he threw 20-plus pitches in all 7 of those appearances. Or 6 out of 7 appearances. The one against Colorado, he only threw 12 pitches. So it could be a matter of he's just being stretched too much. But I'm not liking what I'm seeing here. He is a player that has 1 more year of arbitration before he becomes an unrestricted free agent. I would rather have Jay Jackson in this lineup right now than Trevor Richards. And I want you to like rip into me if I'm off base here.
I don't think you are, and I mean, you look at the outings too, and he was only used back to back on one of these occasions. It was that game against Baltimore, and he gave up the 5 runs.
Yeah.
Every other time, he had at least a day's rest between outings. So, I mean, I don't think the Jays are gonna DFA Trevor Richards. I don't think it'll happen. I don't even know if it's worth us spending a lot of time talking about it, because they have Bowden Francis and Jay Jackson, who both have options and can go down.
You know who also has been not good, and this would be a very easy decision. Chad Green. That's a lot much easier decision to make than Trevor Richards.
You don't think Chad Green's been good? I mean, what was it? One outing when he gave up the runs in his very first time out. I guess he gave up runs. Sorry, on the Friday night to Kansas City as well too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm still.
It's tough.
It's not going to happen either. I don't think we're just kind of beating our heads against the wall to make something of the situation where there's really nothing.
If I was in charge of the situation, I thank God I'm not, because we would have lost 120 games at this point of the season. I think at this point of the season, you look at the guys who got you there, and then you also look at the guys who are hottest.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's as easy as you send down Jay Jackson.
I think it is.
I don't know. Bowden Francis can't go anywhere, though, in my opinion.
Yeah,
that's
why I'm saying Jay Jackson should be the guy to go.
Okay. I mean, I guess we'll leave it there for now. It's unfortunate. I think if Chad Green falters one more time in the game, I think they have to look at it. They have to make a decision.
Don't know. Yeah.
So how many high leverage situations is Chad Green going to pitch in this season?
Hard to say.
The rest of the year. Do you trust him?
Yes.
Do you trust him to go out there? And how many times does he have to cock it up before you're like...
We'll cross that bridge when we get there.
I don't know, man. I feel like even though they're riding high right now, like I don't know if you want to risk it. I don't know. I think it's a tougher decision than what people think, but I'm excited to have Eric Swanson back, especially if he comes back at full strength, because Eric Swanson has been, if not the MVP of this bullpen, like 1B of MVP level. I think the real MVP is Tim Mesa, but whatever. We'll talk about that some other time. But let's talk about the games. We'll start with the game Friday, the 5-4 game. Kind of a classic baseball game, though, especially for the Jays. Do nothing the first 5 innings. Scratch cross a run in the 6th, and then bust open in the 7th, and really kind of put this one to bed. Mm-hmm. Kikuchi gave us 5 innings, 8 Ks to 1 walk. He did give up the solo taco. I don't know. Are you fine with that?
No, nothing wrong with it. I mean, it's your number 5 starter, I think.
Yeah.
He gives you those type of innings, and I think you're fine with it.
Yep. I wasn't very pleased with Richards or Green, and I have to say, even though it was a 4-out save, Romano... I was a little uncomfortable.
Looked uncomfortable again today.
We'll talk about that too when we get to the Sunday's game. But I think really what impressed me was just how quickly Bobichet came back into the lineup and then made a difference. And even though Vladdy is struggling mightily at the plate, he's still kind of brute forcing his way into getting RBIs. You know what I mean? Like he's still delivering, like he's getting us something, which is nice.
And I mean, to say Vladdy's strength at the plate, you look at his last 30 games, he's hitting .280, .361 on base, and a .407 slug.
Yeah,
the
for
OPS,
Vladdy, that's...
The OPS still isn't as high as it could be, but...
It's because of the power.
13 walks, 13 strikeouts over that time, so he's not chasing as much anymore. And in fact, you look at his last 7 games, he's only struck out once and walked 6 times. And the slug is at .984 the last 7 games. So
the big thing with Vladdy is the power is way down, and a lot of it has to do with the chasing.
Yeah, and yeah, like even over his last 15, the slug's at 452, which is a better number. For him.
For Vladdy, for what we had hoped we would see from him this season, it's... I wouldn't... Okay, you're probably right.
Career slug is 489, so he's been right in and around there the last 15 days.
Yeah, which is good to see because he was dreadful for way too long during this season.
The fact for me that the chasing has gone down by so much and the walks have come back, I think that's a very positive sign. I mean, we've seen... It also helps when you have a hot Springer hitting back up at the top of the lineup as well, too. It takes a lot of the pressure off of Vladdy, because and now that Bo's back as well, right? You've got your top three guys kind of back where they should be in their respective spots in the order, and I think having two incredibly talented hitters ahead of Vladdy will do nothing but help him. And the fact that Schneider's been hitting really hot and has been hitting cleanup too is obviously and Schneider's really good at taking a walk as well. So that's one thing I've noticed about these young kids is that him and Horowitz are both really patient.
That was the next thing I was going to bring up was that immediately after Guerrero in the lineup on Friday, Schneider went 2-for-2 with two doubles and two walks. And Biggio was 0-for-1, but he had two walks.
Yep.
And then he was pinch hit for Clement, and Clement cashed in a ribby, which you love to see. These guys, they come off the bench, these younger players, and they're really delivering now. And it's the reason why the team is 9-3 in their last 12 games. It's ridiculous. But I think overall, this was like one of those classic games where the Jays wait. And they push. Well, I mean, obviously they push the Snyder out.
Yeah.
Because he was an opener. And then Marsh came in, no relation. And was pretty solid for them. And then they finally started hacking into the bullpen. And that was it. They were able to bust the game open in the seventh. And textbook Blue Jays win, though. They were able to cruise into the through the eighth and ninth, despite the hiccups from Green and Romano. Solid 5-4 win. No notes.
Yeah. Game two, you could kind of almost say the same thing that you just did, where they waited out to an opener again. James MacArthur had two really solid innings for them no hits allowed. And then Zach Greinke, who's definitely inching his way towards retirement, he's 1-15 on the year now with a 5.47 ERA. Like it's time to hang him up there, bud. But he came in for the bulk work and was only able to go 3 2/3 and give up 4 runs to the Jays. And those 4 runs were scattered over 4 innings. So it's like the Jays just kind of, they waited for Greinke to get in. Springer took him deep twice. It was George's first 2-home run game of the season. And I mean, we were talking a while ago, like Springer's OPS was below 700. All of a sudden it's back up to 749. And I mean,
he's healthy. I think that's what it
is. Yeah. He's played all year. Like he hasn't missed any time on the IL, which has really helped. But I mean, last 30 games for him, OPS is 934, and he's hitting 316 or 319 over that time. So it's been only 6 home runs in the last 30 games. But, I mean, obviously the slugging is over 500 in that time. So he's had more extra base hits. The walks have come up for him as well, 17 walks to 23 strikeouts over that time. And he's set a career high in stolen bases this year as a 33-year-old player. So I think the fact that we can see George is healthy – the underlying metrics were lacking at the start of the year. The exit velocities weren't as good. He was getting underneath of everything, but whatever he's been working on lately in the cages has obviously turned around. He's only hitting 6 points below his career average now. The OPS is still 90 points below, but it's creeped up to the point where if he continues to slug 556 over the last month of the season, and we're not going to care where the actual final number finishes. It's how you finish, not how you start, right? Matt Chapman came out hot and has since been one of the worst hitters on the team in terms of numbers. Yeah. So you can come out flying in April, but if you're not flying in September, who cares?
Oddly enough, after the top three in the order, it was a tough game for the rest of them. Schneider went 0-for-4 with 3 Ks.
Yep.
I think he flew out or popped out in the fourth one, and he had runners on.
Yeah, Cavan had the RBI double, but I mean.
Yeah, it was tough, though. Mm-hmm. It was a tough game. It was a tough game for Kirk. Tough game for Clement. Tough game for KK at the back, but KK's a vet. We're talking about the young guys right now.
Yeah.
Some of them, they really struggled. We didn't see a lot to write home about. I think anytime those young guys go up against someone like Greinke, they're going to fall for his tricks.
Mm-hmm.
He's just too wily. But Gausman, holy shit.
Yeah, he's back. He cut his eight hair innings, and he's back.
Eight innings pitched. One earned run, which was off a solo home run, and that was in the fifth inning. Otherwise, 10 Ks and two hits, only one walk, and then Hicks came in, and there was nothing else to be said about this game. This was like basically George Springer wills a victory.
Yeah, George Springer great. And Kevin Gausman beat the Royals on Saturday, for sure.
And then today's game, man. This
what a weird one, hey?
It was weird because, again, the first five innings, nothing happening. And then all of a sudden, both teams get lucky in the sixth, and Barrios had a rare, tough hit. I wouldn't even say it was that tough of an inning. It was just...
some good hits, you know? The Royals played well offensively in that inning. They made the right contact, put the
they
ball
got what
right
they
spot.
Needed.
Exactly.
Isbell got the triple. Bobby Witt had the double.
Yeah.
That got them the run. But oh my God, the sixth inning, the bottom of the sixth. I've never seen anything like that in my entire life.
I've never seen anything like that in my minor league baseball that I umpire, let alone in major league baseball. Couple walks and then three straight wild pitches. Including
it basically ended the game.
Including the first one where he just completely like fell. I don't know. Something had to be not right, you know? Like, I don't think you see a major league pitcher throw three wild pitches like that if everything is normal.
Yeah, I mean,
you can't
at
tell
that
me
point,
he's in his head that much at that after one wild pitch, you know?
I think he was probably exhausted. He was already, I mean, if I remember
pitches,
correctly,
yeah,
he finished with 105 pitches, and I think when he finally gave up the second run, I think that was it. I think he was.
Yeah, banged. So, and I mean, you look at it, so in that inning, there were two outs. Vladdy worked a six-pitch walk. And then Schneider, right behind him, worked a seven-pitch walk. So he'd just thrown 13 pitches to three batters, or to two batters, to get himself
then,
over 100 pitches. And then wild pitch, wild pitch, wild pitch.
They should have pulled him immediately after the Schneider walk because 100%. It was clear he was going wild. And then
he walks Kirk on four pitches, too, and none of them were close.
No,
including
well,
those three wild pitches, obviously.
Yeah, that basically ruined the game for Kansas City, which is unfortunate because Reagan's actually otherwise... I mean, he walked
really
a
good.
Ton of batters.
Yeah, he did.
But he was still able to limit contact. He only gave up one hit. Can't be mad at him for that.
Yeah, six walks he ended up finishing with, and the three last batters that he faced were all walks. So
still finished, still rocking a 3.01 ERA in 77 innings.
They mentioned it on the broadcast, too. This is one of the guys they got from Texas in the Aroldis Chapman trade that they made. Like way prior to the trade deadline, and he's a converted reliever into a starting pitcher.
He's got good stuff because he was one out away from his third consecutive quality start.
Yeah, and they mentioned that at one point he had a 20 something inning scoreless streak that they mentioned on the broadcast as well too.
Yeah.
And I mean it's interesting for a guy who. Started off as a reliever, and then KC gets him from Texas, and they convert him into a starting pitcher. And look at him now. I mean, he's...
Yeah, they left him in for too long.
They left him out to dry a little bit there, especially after the first stumble. And then I think I would have pulled him after the first run scored on the wild pitch, like the second wild pitch. I'd have just
in the middle of the at-bat?
Yeah, 100%. I don't care. I know the Royals aren't making the playoffs, but I'm still trying to win baseball games. And at that point, they were still up 2-1. I'm not letting him throw that third wild pitch. I don't care who the pitcher is. I think that if you want to be taken seriously as a baseball team, you have to make that move. Obviously, something wasn't right. I'm just saying, like, I wouldn't be surprised if he misses a start or something with whatever an ankle injury or whatever it may be from that weird stumble he had. But there was something that wasn't right with him mechanically and probably physically after that point. So
I think everything you said is would be the correct. That would be like the money ball, like that. You would definitely do that.
This is the smart move.
It is, for sure. I would agree with that. I would even go so far as to say he shouldn't have even have been on the bump against Kirk at all after back-to-back walks, especially when you're up 2-0. I know it's he only needed one out, but they were really pressing their luck, but that was the TSN turning point right there.
Yeah.
And the team ended up, I mean, with the game tied, and again, the Jays' late-inning theatrics, getting a home run off of from Kevin Kiermaier,
that helps.
Off of Clark, in the seventh. I mean, shit. I just think it's tough. But that's baseball. I guess every team goes through that. But Kansas City has felt that pain 100 times now this season. They're 44-100, and they still have 18 games left to play. Oof, that's tough. But again, late inning theatrics. The Jays got what they needed. KK gave them the lead with the homer. Really skied one. It only went 361 feet, but if it goes over the fence, can't be mad.
Far enough.
Yeah, and Espinal with a very clutch and timely effort with the single on the soft bunt. Varsho. Motors home.
Yeah.
And then Biggio with the pinch hit single. I've seen enough. We said this before with Cabin. I've seen enough now where I know the numbers don't reflect how much better he's been in his last like 30 games, probably even longer than that. Cause he had a fucking miserable April and May was good. June was not, July was good, August was okay, and now September, he's up to 286 for the month. Like, what we're seeing out of Cabin now is we're seeing consistency with his plate appearances. He's finally getting, like, routine PAs, which I really like to see. I think the competition between him and Santiago Espinal is over. But also, it's not even about power to me. It's the timely hits. It's the willingness to take the walks. In his last 30, he has 15 walks to 25 strikeouts. Now, the strikeouts are very high for Cabin. They always have been. But the walks are critical in this team being able to, you know, get base runners on. And we don't care whether or not it's a single or a walk. Especially if nobody's on base. Cabin's OBP in his last 30 games is .381, which is spectacular.
You take those numbers off the bench.
Off the bench?
And he's been playing it pretty much every day because of the fact that Chappie's out. So
he's the kind of player whose OBP is always going to be about 100 points above his average. And if he can get his average up to .230, .240, around there, that's terrific. That's what you want.
Look at his career numbers, right? .227 average with a .343 on base. OPS .733 for his career. Those last 30 games, it's right around those numbers. So,
higher.
You take that. Yeah, the slugging's lower, but the average and the OBP have been higher, which is nice. And he's been actually hitting the ball the other way a little bit, which we haven't seen too much from him. Not sure how much of that's intentional and how much of it's just being late and still making contact, but I mean, we'll take whatever's happening. It's positive results. So.
I'm very, very comfortable with the platoon of Ernie Clement and Cabin Biggio next year if Whit Merrifield is gone. I mean, obviously, I would prefer to have Whit Merrifield on this team, but are they willing to pay $19 million to do it?
I don't know about that.
But that was a timely
offseason for sure.
Biggio single that got us the 5-2 lead. Fun and excitement in the ninth. Romano, two hits, one walk, two
Ks.
Gives you palpitations. A save is a save and a win is a win. We take it.
Yep.
And just like that, the Toronto Blue Jays went from being on the on the struggle bus on the outside looking in, and all of a sudden, you know, whoop-de-doo, the Jays are back in a playoff spot. And not only that, they've got a little bit of space between them and their opponents. Let's talk about it, Justin.
Yep.
Sure. Right now, the Tampa Bay Rays are 8.5 games up on Seattle. They look like they're getting
they're
into
the
playoffs.
They've already got 88 wins. They'd have to lose every game almost to not make it.
Baltimore are white hot right now. Hot like the surface of 1,000 suns hot.
Yeah.
They look like, if I can be so bold, World Series contenders.
I would say you got, I mean, what is the second best record in baseball right now, right? So
that's right. Yep.
Only 3 wins less than the Braves. They are losing right now in a rain delay to the Red Sox, but Boston's trying to keep their season alive. But I mean, Seattle lost to Tampa Bay today already. So the Jays now own the second wild card spot, 7.5 back of Tampa. Texas is currently beating Oakland, so they'll still only be a game, or they'll only be a half game back of Seattle, a game and a half back of Toronto, which means if the Blue Jays and Rangers were to split their series, the Jays would still be ahead. And even if Texas wins 3 out of 4, hopefully that doesn't happen, the Jays would still be a half game up. So the Jays have definitely done what they needed to do the last week and a bit here against these lesser teams to pad their record a bit and give themselves that just margin of breathing room that they didn't have earlier when they were still on the outside looking in. And what do we have left, Patrick? 19 games, I think.
Yep.
So, yep. I mean, you probably have to win 10 to 12 of them in order to have a realistic shot at the playoffs. And if you can win, 13 and get to 93 wins, you've got to think you're in a wild card spot at that point.
That's what they projected, if I remember, on Fangraphs at the start of the year,
yeah,
93 to get into a wild card spot. The Jays would need to go 13-6.
That's tough.
Which is
these teams.
That's tough. In their final 19 games.
Yeah.
But
the worst team they're going to play is the Yankees.
The thing is, Seattle and Texas have lost games to teams they were otherwise supposed to win.
Yeah.
The Rangers are now projected to win 88 games while the Jays are projected to win 90. That's the weight on this series coming up is a lot higher than what it was a week ago.
Yeah.
For the Rangers and for the Jays, the weight is still there, but situation is not as dire as what it was.
Yeah, and I think you look at that the projected final standings now, the Jays would be in WC2 because they're even ahead of the Mariners by one game there as well at 90-72 is the projected. That's if the Jays go 11-9 the rest of the way. I guess it would only be 10-9 now because it doesn't have today's updated standings.
Yeah, that's right.
So they'll either be projected for 90 or 91 wins. And, I mean, Fangraphs thinks 90 wins is going to get you a second or a third wildcard spot in the American League because they have the Rays at 98 projected wins and the Orioles at 101. You're not catching either of those teams unless you sweep Tampa in the remaining 6 games, but you're not really worried about that now. You're worried about You're worried about getting WC2. I think you can beat Tampa in a playoff series in 3 games. There was an interesting thread on Twitter today. I can't remember who had put it up, but the Blue Jays pitching staff as a whole has actually fared much worse against the Minnesota Twins than they have against the Tampa Bay Rays for this season, but for their entire careers. Every single starter has worse numbers against Minnesota, and that's with Berríos pitching a ton of time in the American League Central. Obviously, he pitched like for the Twins, but
yeah,
still would have pitched against the Rays too, being in the American League. And Gausman has a history against the Rays from his time in Baltimore. And even his career numbers from when he was a worse pitcher are still better against the Twins, or against the Rays, than they are against the Twins. So,
if I may be so bold, I'm about to say something I didn't expect to say at the start of the season.
Yeah.
I am not very interested in playing the Minnesota Twins in the playoffs.
I agree.
Even if they are perceived by most metrics to be the weaker team.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I am not interested in giving them a window.
Sure.
I would much rather play Tampa or Seattle, partially because I have an axe to grind against both teams because they are the teams that have bounced the Jays in their last two playoff appearances.
Yeah.
But I also think that Minnesota with home field advantage, no, thank you.
Yeah, and I mean, look, if you play Tampa, you know you're not going to have any weather impacting your games because it's an indoor stadium.
I hate that stadium so much.
I hate it too, but you don't have to worry about that early October. Maybe it's a colder week or it's kind of wet out, you know? You don't have to worry about anything like that in that first round of the wild card because all three games would be at the Trop. Versus playing either, I mean, the Mariners have a roof on their stadium too that they can pull over. But obviously the Twins don't. Target Field's open. I've been there before. It rains in Minneapolis quite a bit. Like there's always that potential for just like circumstances outside of your control to impact a series.
Yeah.
And I mean, you don't want to say that would be a disadvantage for the Blue Jays to have it rain, but I mean, it's a disadvantage for everybody. So it's you'd rather go into a climate controlled environment, play a team that you're very familiar with and you're going to see six more times in the next 3 weeks. In Tampa, you could, in realistically, you could finish your season against Tampa and immediately go play them again. Like it's a very real possibility, and you've got to do well on those remaining six games to set the tone. You know,
I think Tampa. This is one of, if not the best version of the Rays ever.
And they have so many injuries.
But they are not. They are not the same team they were like 2 months ago.
No.
And I smell the blood in the water.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Seattle, on the other hand, I don't see. This is what I don't understand. Between Seattle and Texas, both of them are scuffling at the worst possible time in the season. If the Boston or New York were any good at all, the door could have been wide open for them to even finish lower.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, Boston has scuttled their season. Those games against Boston and New York may not be as difficult as what we anticipate them to be, because they got three against Boston after the Rangers. Then they got Yankees, Rays close out the season. See, that's nine games against teams that are either at or below 500. Those might not be as difficult as we think they're going to be.
Yeah.
That's not too bad. You still got to win them. You got to play them. You got to win them. You can't afford to give Boston anything, any wiggle room. They are 6.5 back, which is pretty close to death.
Pretty much.
Mathematically, they're not eliminated, but as long as they have these games against divisional opponents, that's enough to help push them back up the standings. This series against Texas, man, this is it. Let's just get into it, because we could gamify a lot of the final 2.5 weeks of the season, but let's just talk about this matchup. And we've got four pitching matchups that are tough, man. This is not going to be easy.
Yeah, I mean, Dane Dunning, the Jays, I believe, saw him back at the beginning of the year, if I remember correctly. Maybe not. Oh, yeah, they did. They saw him in June. He went six innings against the Jays, allowed two runs, including one home run, walked one and struck out three, and got the win that day. His last month or so, he's been a bit worse. He pitched a bit worse because he was pitching at like a 2.5 ERA pace to start the year. He had a 4.01 ERA in August, and in his last time out against the Rangers and Texas, or the Astros, excuse me, and Texas got absolutely hammered by Houston in the last series that they just played this past week. He gave up 11 hits and 9 runs over 5 1/3, including 3 home runs. The entire Texas Rangers pitching staff got absolutely destroyed by Jose Altuve in that series.
He wasn't very good against the Mets, the Twins, or the Brewers either. No quality starts.
Been walking more batters lately. The home runs have been a big issue the last month and a half here.
So I think the Blue Jays really have to go into attack mode against this guy because of the fact that he's been struggling recently. So he's probably going to be trying to work in the strike zone more. He's approaching his career high in innings pitched. He's at 146. Last year was his high at 153. So you've got to think that fatigue is starting to become an issue for him. He doesn't have that track record, as this is only his third full year in the league, not counting 2020, obviously.
Yep.
But he's a sinker baller. He throws a sinker 33.9% of the time.
The best sinker, I think, in baseball.
Very good sinker statistically. The slider, the cutter are his next most used pitches. And then he'll mix in the changeup and very rarely throw a curveball and a four-seam fastball. Look at his pitch usage, even if we just kind of go into the month by month here for 2023. Lately, he's really been featuring kind of the sinker again the most, of course, the cutter and the changeup. Outside of that, it's been not a ton of those.
He has a very good cutter.
Yeah.
He has a very good cutter. The slider is not the pitch to be feared. Nor would I argue the changeup, really. We're probably going to see a healthy diet of sinker cutter combo.
Yep.
And that's going to be annoying as hell.
July, Patrick, he was throwing the sinker 32% of the time. It's gone up to 47.5% of the time this month. In his first start last time, 37 last month. So the sinker's been getting a ton of usage lately for him.
Yeah, but he's having an incredible season.
He's
going up against Chris Bassitt, who's coming off of some all-timer starts.
Yeah, he's been
terrific. Way back when I was like, what the fuck's going on with Chris Bassitt? Why does he not look good? Is he going to deliver for us, or is this going to be like a waste of money? Well, I'm pretty sure he's gotten seven decisions or something like that in a row since I thought that.
Yeah.
So I don't know if it's because I manifested that or not, but
Speaking of good sinkers,
Bassitt. Yeah. I mean, I think Dane Dunning's sinker is pretty good. Bassitt's by run value is better. However, some of what Bassitt throws is just not good. Yeah, he's got a bad cutter.
He relies on a lot of his kind of tertiary pitches for just
getting out of this. Yeah.
And just kind of like, you know, like he tries to baffle guys more so than throw it as like an out pitch. He just tries to mix them in there every once in a while.
Yeah.
So I think that's Bassitt, a big part of it.
Bassett's got such a unique pitch mix, and also he has the ability to just, this isn't working. I'm going to throw this. This isn't working. I'm going to throw this. He's had two 8-inning appearances in a row where he's been able to drop his ERA by like 30 points. It's incredible.
Yep.
And really, he's, aside from a slight hiccup against the Guardians, quality start. I mean, or pretty close to quality starts. I mean, we can't be asking much more than what we're getting out of Bassitt.
Yeah.
This matchup is a lot closer than you would think. It looks a little skewed in Dunning's favor on paper, but that's going to be a tight game.
Yeah, the thing is, too, I mean, obviously, Chris Bassett's last two starts against Washington and Oakland, not quality teams. And Dunning just got absolutely obliterated by the Astros, who are obviously a quality team. So there's a little bit of a kind of a tale of two recent starts, you know? Like, it's been kind of an opposite for these two guys. Bassett's on a high right now after dominating a couple of weak teams, and Dunning is on a low after getting shellacked by the division-leading Astros. So that series really cost Texas a shot at the division, which they had been holding a comfortable lead in for all of the season up to really the last week here, as they've been in free fall. They're 5-15 in their last 20 games, I saw today on the broadcast.
Oof.
And that's tough. I mean, they're picking the worst time to be at the low point of their season.
Too bad.
Tuesday's game. These games are all 7:07 Eastern time starts, by the way. They're all evening games. Max Scherzer, who got traded to the Rangers at the deadline from the Mets after getting a huge contract, is going to go up against Hyunjin Ryu. So we're going to see a couple of veterans. One guy in Scherzer who still relies a lot on velocity. to get past people, and the other guy in Ryu, who is doing his best to throw 64 mile an hour curveballs and make guys look just completely foolish, like they're swinging at a slow pitch, in a slow pitch game. And it's crazy. I mean, for me, that like Scherzer's still has a 94 average fastball. It's dipped down quite a bit from his high, but he still relies a lot on location with that pitch in order to get guys out. The fastball run value, and I mean, the run values on all of his pitches are not as high as they have been, and I think Father Time is probably catching up on him. Also was pitching on a shitty Mets team for a while, which probably didn't help the morale at all.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you look at his last time out, too. He also got roughed up against the Astros, Patrick. He went only lasted three innings and gave up seven runs, including three home runs to Houston. Before that, he'd been fine since he came to Texas. All throughout July, he had five quality starts for Texas, except for one where he kind of left the game a little early, I think due to a rain play against Milwaukee. But it's been a good season for Scherzer in terms of what he's been able to deliver. I think he's been on a few some teams who have let him down, but that last time out against Houston definitely got roughed up quite a bit.
Yeah, even though the ERA doesn't look great and blah 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 blah.
Yeah.
You check under your bed at night for Max Scherzer still.
Yeah, the expected numbers are still there.
Yeah, you cannot even give this man like a millimeter of space.
Yep.
Because he'll torch you.
100%.
I'm pleased with Ryu. I think the best we can hope for is five innings of sub-3 earned run ball, and I'll take it. I mean, that's what we need right now. That's what we need to see. This is the toughest pitching matchup, in my opinion. I think Max Scherzer is the best out of all of the Ranger starters.
I would say so.
I'm not... Yeah, I mean, he still has the highest ceiling, and he certainly has had the best career. We'll talk about Nathan Eovaldi in the last game, but this is a very tough game for the Jays. Yeah, it's going to be rough. I don't know if this is a loony dog one or not, but...
Tuesday home game, baby.
Yeah.
Hope you're crushing glizzies. Jordan Montgomery in game 3, another trade deadline acquisition, had been with St. Louis to start the year after signing a contract there. But obviously St. Louis has just completely turned into a dumpster fire of a franchise for some reason, which you didn't expect to see, but it's happened for some reason.
Yeah, this was a guy that I wanted the Jays to pursue when to the deadline. And oddly enough, he has had three not-so-great starts in a row. In fact, his last two starts were shit.
Mm-hmm.
He got beat up by Minnesota, and he followed that up by getting beat up by the Athletics 2 days ago. Is the bloom off the rose with Jordan Montgomery? That's three not-so-great starts after getting dealt and then being...
Well,
he had four quality starts in a row or something like that before the wheels are coming off.
It seems like the entire Texas pitching staff has just suffered a collective oofening. And I don't know if it's just maybe time of year, or maybe teams have caught on to what they're trying to do and the Rangers just haven't made adjustments yet.
The sinker, though, with Jordan Montgomery is still good. It's just, I think you've got to... I don't know how you're taking it bat aggressively against a sinker. I don't know how you do it, but the changeup, the fastball, they're not really that impressive. This guy is here to eat innings, and I think he's their number 5 starter, if I'm not mistaken.
That's correct, yeah. And keep in mind that they would have had Jacob deGrom, but he got hurt, of course, in the beginning of the year, too, so it's...
Yeah, they were good for a while, and then now they've been shit. Yusei Kikuchi, comeback player of the year.
Could be. Yep.
Yusei Kikuchi hits the bump. I don't know what we can say, really. We haven't already said 1,000 times against Kikuchi. The only pitch, really, that I think has not been great this year is the changeup. Other than that, the slider and the four-seamer combo.
Mm-hmm.
Frustrating the hell out of guys. He's got a curveball he mixes in too. We've talked about this many, many times. He just does not give up anything off his break stuff. And I don't know, man. I think he's comeback player of the year after the shit that he had to go through last year. He put in the work, and having him as our number five starter, or in the number five slot. Oh my God.
I love having Ryu ahead of Kikuchi. You go from lefty with just pure like movement and deception in Ryu to a fight like a absolute like bulldog in Kikuchi, who's just he's just been going after people this year.
He's just going to muscle you, right? With the fastball slider.
100%. And he only needs three more strikeouts to tie his career high from 2021 with Seattle. And it's probably going to happen soon. And he's 13 innings off of a career high that he pitched in 2019 with the Mariners. So he's likely going to surpass the majority of his career high numbers. And for the quality stuff, he's already had a career best ERA and WHIP this year. Obviously, 3.57 is a great ERA, and his WHIP's down to 1.24. But I mean, you look at his Savant page, just the percentile rankings compared to last year, and he went from a guy with a bunch of blueberries to a guy with, I guess we call it strawberries. This time, they're all from blue to red in a lot of categories. So I think I think he's going to definitely get some votes for comeback player of the year. He should get some Cy Young votes too. I said he was going to get some Cy Young votes. If you remember at the start of the season, I said there'd be some like 10th place Cy Young.
I see it, but there are so many other guys that are having.
Oh yeah, I think he'll just get like a couple like throwaway like 10th place Cy Young votes.
I see what you're
just
saying.
Just one.
Yeah.
Like I hope like one like Toronto writer, like say Ben Nicholson Smith or Keegan or whoever gets the vote for Cy Young gets to like just throws him on there as like the 10th. You know, just as like a nod to such a great year.
Yeah, he's been sitting on 9 wins for a long time. I want to get him that because he hasn't won a game since August 2nd against the Baltimore Orioles.
Yeah,
he hasn't been bad though. He followed that up with a quality start. He wasn't that great against Baltimore again on the 22nd. Okay against Cleveland.
And then they had that fueled by errors start against Colorado. That didn't
nasty start against the Rockies, and then obviously he was rock solid 2 days ago against the Royals. I just want to get him win number 10, man.
Yep.
I like the matchup here. I think it favors Toronto. The lefty versus lefty matchup is intriguing. Forgot to mention that it's Scherzer as a righty versus lefty Ryu.
Yeah.
That'll be fun. But
series finale is juicy too.
That's the battle for the Cy Young, I think.
It could
pretty
be, yeah.
Close to it.
Nathan Eovaldi versus Kevin Gausman. Eovaldi's been doing it differently this year. He hasn't been striking out as many guys as we've kind of seen.
He doesn't
a lot.
Need to.
Yeah, he's only had 115 strikeouts through 127 innings, which is low for his career strikeouts per inning average, a little bit lower. But he's also just been limiting base runners. His walk numbers are great this year. Has really done a good job of kind of keeping people off base and has been reliant a lot on really three very, very good pitches in his four-seamer, splitter, and cutter. Those are all like positive run value pitches. He doesn't have like one overwhelmingly good pitch like other pitchers tend to have. Say like
he just has three
Bassett's or the Dunnings, you know.
He has three very good
three
pitches.
Three plus pitches, yeah, and it's
four seamer splitter, and of course he's got a very good cutter. I mean, he always did, but
yeah, I mean 95 mile an hour average fastball, guy who can touch 97, 98 when he needs to. He can get you with the velocity. He can get you with the off speed stuff. He's a very good pitcher, and I think that obviously we've seen him lots just based on his years in the American League with not only Texas but also with Boston for
the last
5 years prior to this as well. So it's been a definitely a guy that Jays are very familiar with as a franchise. Lots of the guys in the lineup, of course, haven't seen him before because they were in Buffalo or just haven't been around that much. But the Springers, the Merrifields, the Bows, the Vladdies are all very familiar with this guy. And I think that's going to definitely help the Jays here in this game. Kevin Gausman, Patrick. Just talked about him, obviously, in the recap of the series with the Royals. But I was a little bit worried about Kevin Gausman kind of going into this most recent start because he just hadn't had that kind of deceptiveness. The splitter wasn't as good.
Kind of
recently.
August.
Yeah, his August was. I mean, a 4.23 is considered shitty for Kevin Gausman, but for most pitchers, you would take that.
but it's definitely his worst month of the year. But obviously, if he can rebound and continue to make the September numbers improve like they have, that they obviously did in this last time out, where he struck out 10, it would be very encouraging for him. I'm surprised. I mean, the splitter run value is only 4 this year, Patrick. It's the lowest it's been since 2019 in terms of the run value on that pitch. His four seamer has actually been his best pitch in terms of value added this year, and that yeah. shocks me a little bit. The splitter still doesn't get hit for power at all. Like, the slugging against it's only 296.
It's not as good, though, as what it was
yeah.
the last couple of years.
He's been using it differently, right? He's been throwing more up in the zone, which has led to his fastball being more effective because he's throwing that lower in the zone, and batters aren't just able to pick a spot and sit on it, you know? They happen to actually swing at everything.
As I finish off my water bottle, it's one of those water bottles, Justin, that has the times on it.
The times.
So you know whether or not you did a good job.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, it just like tells you like, oh, 7 o'clock, you should be at
I just drink the water, bro.
Yeah, whatever. Fuck you. Let's talk about the only pitcher who's not going to pitch against Texas very briefly.
Yeah.
Another guy you could make a case for is having a comeback player of the year performance. Jose Berríos. Again, another quality start today. I don't know what else to say. I mean, the ERA is up a little bit in his last few performances, but yeah, I mean, I don't know. Sometimes guys have stankers, and Berríos hasn't had a lot of them this year, and his record is only 10-10. It's not really reflective of like the quality of his season.
Yeah.
The Jays are spoiled, man. Their entire rotation has an ERA below 3.69.
And you think of it too, Patrick, outside of Alec Manoah's struggles, everyone else has made all their starts.
Yeah.
The Jays haven't had any time lost to injury. Berríos has never been on the IL, knock on wood, in his career. But you look at Gausman, only missed a few last year for taking that line drive off the foot. Ryu obviously missed most of last season, but I mean, obviously is healthy now. So, I mean, even Manoah was healthy the entire time, just not effective, obviously. But the Jays haven't had to deal with a ton of pitching injuries this year. It's mostly just been the Denny Jansons, the Bo Bichettes, the Matt Chapmans, and KK's brief time on the IL, Belty with a couple of back issues and the stomach poopy bum here and there. But it's been a relatively healthy season, and especially in the rotation. So yeah, you're definitely right. It's just, they're very blessed to have that 5 reliable guys in the rotation right now.
Yeah, man. The thing I like about Berríos is that his pitch mix is a little bit different. We've got guys who throw a lot of sinkers on this team, and
yeah.
Guys who throw a lot of sliders. And I just like that he's got that unique pitch, the slurve. I don't like saying it because it just tastes weird when you say it. but I like his pitch mix. I like what he's done this year, and I was really happy. Seeing his performance today, it gave the Jays the chance to win the game. They got the timely hitting. All the numbers, the Ks are back up. The walks are even up a little bit from last year from a BB per 9 perspective, but it's pretty close. It's the home runs that are down. It's the BABIP is down 50 points, or very close to it. 40 points, sorry, I'm not good at math. He's stranding guys on base. He's generating a slightly larger amount of ground balls. I mean, the FIP, he's beating the FIP projection by quite a bit, but it's just I feel like the trust is back. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think one of the big reasons is probably that his fastball is not a negative 17 run value this year, his four seamer, you know, like it's a positive one pitch, huge turnaround. The fact that he's just been able to locate it, that's the biggest thing that has obviously changed, is just the ability to put that pitch where he needs to and not just have meatballs all the time. And obviously having 2+ pitches in the sinker and the slurf has helped him help that pitch be better. And he's thrown, obviously he went from throwing his sinker 26% of the time last year to up to 30 now. It's become his most used pitch instead of his third most used pitch. And I think that's made a big difference as well. He's dropped the four-seamer from 27.7 last year down to 21.1 this year. Sinker and slurve have gone up. Fastball's gone down. Changeup's gone up a little bit to make up some of that gap as well. But I think the biggest thing that he's done is he's, like you said, it's pitch mix. He's refined how often he should throw certain pitches. Really, they've done a good job. I think the catching staff has done a good job with him too of throwing the right pitch in the right time as well. And we saw today he got the last out, just blew a fastball by a guy for a strikeout for his last out of the game. So the fact that he's able to throw that fastball confidently and effectively this year has just made all the difference in the world.
And that's what I love is, like, this is one of the best rotation. This is definitely the best rotation since 2016 the Jays have fielded, for sure. It's
better than that year's rotation in terms of the numbers, you know.
It's close. I don't know. There's some things I like more about that. I mean, I thought that the 2016 rotation had more variety.
Yeah.
Pitch variety.
Sure.
But also, I think that was also Marco Estrada's best year. Mm-hmm. And then it was also Jay Happ's best year. And then the rest of the gang. I mean, yeah, you're probably right. Like, by the numbers, they might be a little bit better. I just felt like there was more variety in 2016, but this is definitely the best staff, like starters since then. And the bullpen is actually better than what it was in 2016. So as long as the team keeps finding ways to win these games, all the easy ones are over. If you're under the impression that there is such a thing as easy games, you got to shut that shit down now. There are games that are not going to be as challenging as what they probably would have been 2 months ago when you look at the schedule. Mm-hmm. Certainly with the Yankees and the Red Sox floundering as their seasons, you know, draw to a close. There's still one more team left in the way.
Yeah.
And you have the opportunity to dummy them and put them down and out.
Yeah. The last,
you gotta do
I want to add a little bit on Texas on the offensive side of things too. I mean, they just had to place Adolis Garcia on the 10-day IL.
That's not good.
Right knee or right patellar tendon strain. The same issue that were the same knee that Bo had, the same tendon that Bo had tendonitis in, but this is an actual strain, so it's a bit of a longer term injury.
That's not good.
They're optimistic that he'll play again this season, but obviously it won't be against the Jays because he's on the 10-day IL, and that hurts them because he was really their biggest bopper this year.
Yeah,
but I mean, they still have Marcus Semien, and they've got Corey Seager, they've got Nate Lau. Mitch Garver's been doing really well for them, mostly playing DH. They went out and got Robbie Grossman at the deadline, who was a potential target for the Blue Jays, switch hitter. He hits home runs quite frequently. Lurie Tavares, Jonah Himes had a good season at catcher. He's really cooled off and had a stint on the IL just after the All-Star break. And has been ice cold lately, but they do have a very good offense, especially the top, I'd say, five guys in their lineup on any given day. They're definitely missing some guys due to injury that are a big factor. And I think that's going to be a part of the reason why that they have kind of floundered a bit. You look at guys on their injured list. Obviously, Josh Young, their rookie third baseman, who was off to a very hot start before he got hurt. This year was hitting .274 with 22 home runs, and that's only in 109 games, but has been on the IL for them since August the 9th. He had thumb surgery and likely won't be back. And then, of course, Garcia's on the IL now. Jake DeGrom's on the IL. Jake Odorizzi, another pitcher on the IL. Garcia, by the way, 34 home runs, 100 RBIs in 135 games now on the IL. So that was their biggest run-producing bat, and they're missing their everyday third baseman and Young as well. So it's definitely the right time for the Jays to be playing a four-game set against the Rangers. Like you said, it's a good opportunity to just bury them, put the dirt on the grave, you know, start putting some nails in that coffin. Gotta do it.
Get rid of them.
Yeah. Gotta do it.
Get rid of them all. Make them go away.
But yeah, huge series. Boston comes to town for the weekend series next, starting on Friday. It's a little too early for us to preview that one now because things could change by then. Could have injuries, could have whatever happened between now and then. So we won't be able to preview that one. We likely won't be back for an episode before then, just based on the fact that all these games against the Rangers are all evening games. So in all likelihood, you'll either see us next Sunday or the Monday off day before the Jays wrap up their, or go out on their final road trip of the year to play the Yankees and the Rays. That'll be on the 19th. Those games start. So out of the remaining 19 games, Patrick, only six on the road, 13 and 6 for home and away. So you like to see that.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I don't know, man.
Jays have done well on the road, but I mean, they just won three at home, obviously against Kansas City. But I think with meaningful baseball, you want to be playing in front of your home crowd. They give you a lift. You get to, obviously, for guys who have their families live with them during the season, like that their family has moved to Toronto, you get to be with your family every night after the game. You get to be around your kids if you've got them. You just, it's a comfortable space rather than living out of hotel rooms. And you just hope that a little bit of this home cooking, so to speak, over these last 3 weeks of the season will help the Jays just wrap up a strong season and hopefully get into the playoffs.
Here's a good note to end the pod on. Keegan Mathieson, this is half hour ago.
Yep.
At Keegan Mathieson on Twitter. Kevin Kiermaier on what's ahead for the Toronto Blue Jays. This is a quote. There's a certain demeanor and aura in the clubhouse right now. I always said that when we fire on all cylinders, we're one of the most dangerous teams in baseball. It's up to us to back up what I'm saying right now. I like that quote. I think it kind of tells you the team probably playing with a little bit more confidence than what they were 2.5 weeks ago. Playing teams that are not in a playoff race probably did a lot to help them. While Seattle and Texas and Houston all had to beat up on one another, and there's not really anybody who's like flying way ahead out of the three of those.
Yeah.
The Jays just have to focus on these next four games and treat them like it is a playoff series. And I think what we said a few weeks ago, and we've been saying this for a while because we've been staring at this matchup on the calendar for a long time. You have to win this one, but they've been so good the last 15 games or so. I think a split is palatable.
That's the minimum you need, yep.
The minimum is a split.
I agree.
Well,
that should be it for us.
That's it for us.
Okay, perfect. Well, if you guys like what we do, thanks for listening as always, of course, but follow us on Twitter at BFMD Podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts and find everything at BFMDpodcast.com. For Patrick out in Halifax, I am Justin here in Saskatoon, and we'll see you next time.